Blog Talk Radio.
Hello, hello, and welcome to Blog Talk Radio. It is the 3rd of December. Christmas Eve will be 3 weeks away, and Sid and I both have our trees up and have our Christmas carols going, and then Sid, in 23 days, your tree comes down.
Yeah, well, that's as mandated by my husband. That's about as long as it can stay up. But I don't mind it. You know, once about 5 o'clock on Christmas Day hits, it's over.
Yeah, it does. I'm the same way with Christmas music. I'll listen to it and then. Yeah, about early evening Christmas Day. It's like, okay, one last round, and then it's off for next year.
It's funny. It's almost like, okay, well, it's almost like sex. Like, after you orgasm, you're like, why did I even do that? Why did I even listen to all that music? I know. You know what? Every guy listening to this knows exactly what I'm talking about.
Well, I don't think I say, why did I do that? It's sort of like, okay, what's on TV right now?
Yeah, all right. It's like, oh, okay, oh, this is fine. Next up.
All right, I wonder how the Patriots did today. I missed the game, so. we have only a couple more shows before we're off for, because Christmas Eve and New Year's Eve are on Thursday this year, so we will not be doing that. And
well, we should do it. Maybe we'll do them Wednesday or something. Those 2 weeks, we should end up the year with some recap stuff. Like, and we're going to have some year-end recap content.
Yes, we are having athlete of the year, hero of the year, asshole of the year, all the stuff we had last year. We're going to have again this year coming up on OutSports. So we have a guest on in a few minutes, Andrea Barone, a pro hockey ref who came out. He's the first in the sport to come out as openly gay. He wrote a terrific story. And you had one yesterday that's gotten some good attention by a gay pro surfer. And that's a sport you would think would be really open to gay people, but we've known historically there's been a lot of homophobia in surfing. And how did you come across this surfer?
You know what's funny? Somebody tweeted at me or wrote me an email, I can't remember what it was, and said, hey, you should profile this guy. And I'd never heard of him. And the link was to a Facebook post this Craig Butler posted back in April saying, hey, I'm gay. And it's just amazing to me that a professional surfer could slip through our cracks. And what's even more is he's actually in a movie, a documentary film that we helped promote and we wrote about called Out in the Lineup. And we didn't even realize that he was in it. So It's amazing. And people say how many athletes are out. We have absolutely no idea. We can try to guess how many are publicly out, but even some of those we don't know about. We just miss them. So just somebody said, hey, why haven't you guys written about this guy? It's like, good question.
Yeah, we've gotten that from time to time. It's kind of like, how did you miss so-and-so? And it's like, well, because we don't follow whatever sport they're talking about. But again, as we say, it's almost like until there's some publicity about them, they don't have the same public outness. Although I guess you could have searched. I guess you could have. Could you have searched his name and the word "gay" and discovered it?
Oh yeah, he was. It was not. It was not a. It was not a. It was not a secret. Not a secret at all. So it was all out there.
But what's cool about it is because it's been a sport that has had a lot of homophobia. I mean, I know the gay surfing group has had, you know, to kind of have privacy and everything like that. And so to have that up is great. But let's change gears to another sport, ice hockey. And on the line with us is Andrea Barone from – where are you at now today, Dre?
I'm in Knoxville right now. I just got in.
In Knoxville.
Knoxville, Tennessee. You know what? Actually, Knoxville – is it Knoxville? There's a place. How long are you there for?
Till Saturday.
Okay, there's a place there called Litton's, Lytton's. Go to Litton's. Trust me. Listen to me. Go to Litton's. Get a hamburger rare, and get the coconut cake, and I will expect a thank you note on Facebook after you do
it. All right. Consider it done.
Well, you are, Dre is in, and everyone calls him Dre, is in Knoxville. He's a referee with the Southern Professional Hockey League and also the East Coast Hockey League, which are basically sort of the minor league feeder system for officials into the NHL. And Dre's dream is to be an NHL official. And this week he wrote a great story about his coming out in the hockey world. Your bosses knew you were writing it, so they were supportive. So I haven't talked to you live since it ran. What has been the reaction since you wrote the story?
It's all been positive. I haven't gotten one negative reaction or one negative comment online, and it's been shared quite a bit, which is really cool to see. And I got maybe 50 or 60 emails so far, and another probably 30 or 40 Facebook messages, and everything's been positive. It's been it's been kind of overwhelming that not even one person has had something bad to say so far. Well, not that I've seen, anyway.
But anybody surprise you? Any athletes or coaches or other fellow refs or?
Not yet. I've actually had some about the last 8 days off, so I haven't really seen anyone. I've gotten some of my refs who already knew, obviously, and who read the story and just said, "Hey, great story. We support you and we're proud of you and all that," and kind of thing, which is really nice. And some guys from who I used to work junior hockey with in Vancouver while I was living there, I haven't heard from a while also. And a lot of people from the sports world on Facebook messaged me. And a lot of people, actually a lot of athletes who've come out through OutSports messaged me. And so that was pretty cool.
What did you expect?
I don't know what I kind of wrote it thinking that I'm just kind of telling my story, and it's another, there've been so many of them that I just thought it was important to do on the reason why I did it is because no one has done it in hockey yet publicly, whether it was a player or a coach or referee or anything. So that's the reason why I did it. On the other spectrum of just sports in general and stuff like that, I thought there'd been so many of them that I didn't think, I thought, to be honest, that it would maybe just kind of, within all the other ones and with a few comments here and there, but I really didn't expect this much reaction so quickly anyway, and it get picked up by so many people. I mean, all my friends in Montreal keep sending me screenshots of where they find the article online and how many times it's been shared and all this stuff. And really, I wasn't expecting that.
What was interesting about your story, and you said you didn't get any negative reply. Well, you've never had anything in your life negative about you being gay, and yet you write about this internalized homophobia and the torment. And it's an interesting dynamic that externally you got nothing but love from your family. You have a brother who himself is gay, and yet you couldn't sort of accept it yourself. Could you talk a little bit about that sort of dichotomy that, the outside world was basically embracing you, but you still kind of hated yourself?
Yeah, I guess that's the part that is different from my story, I guess, now that you mention it. And I think about it because reading all the other stories, I mean, obviously everyone had their own struggle, but whether it was internal or not, most people also had an external factor, whether it was someone, family member who didn't come around, or took a while to come around, and in that process, made it harder for the athlete or the person to come out. But for me, it was I haven't had not even one person through my whole experience have a negative reaction, not to my face anyway, and not that I've heard of around. I've heard people, talking and stuff, but never. It's never anything negative. It's just like, oh, yeah, he's gay. Well, like, okay, I didn't know that. Or, and they maybe kind of have the questions and it ends there. But for myself, it was kind of like, it was. And I think that's the damage that the cultural homophobia in sports, and specifically hockey, does. I think I'm a good example of that in the sense that it did so much damage early on to me that, you can't be gay and play hockey, and you can't. It's just not, like I always say, it's not compatible. and it's just one of those things that really stuck with me, and it caused me a lot of torment and a lot of pain and a lot of suffering within, you know, self-torment and this battle that I had with myself and no one else, really, which is really kind of strange to say, but yeah.
Well, it's funny, you know, we try to dig into why these athletes, when they have supportive parents, everything ends up going great, and there's not a single negative response, and you wonder, everyone has the same story, and you've obviously, people have read stories in OutSports, and they still think their experience is going to be negative, and it's this, the general homophobia in sports tell this lie about how LGBT athletes are going to be accepted, because we hear fag and that's so gay and stuff in sports, and because in men's sports, if you're weak, you're equated with gay and you're equated with being a girl, then you come to this conclusion, not surprisingly, that you're going to be rejected. And of course, every single time, it's the complete opposite. Every time. But there's this lie about it.
Absolutely. And I think one of the other things is that, especially in, you know, male-dominated sports, is that everyone, it's so competitive, especially at the professional level. It's so competitive day in and day out, and that everyone's looking to get an edge on someone else, and they always play on that line. And, it's getting better, but no one wants to – everyone has their guard up at all times. That's just the way it is, especially, you know, on the ice or on the field, and, you know, still in the locker rooms and around the building and around the game. But specifically, you know, while the game's going on, everyone has their guards are, you know, as high as they can be, basically. The walls are up. And you don't want to show one inch of weakness. And because of what you just said, it comes off as a weakness, or comes off as, you know, inferior, not as strong or feminine or whatever. That's why I think so many closeted athletes kind of, you know, shy away from it, because they see it as putting their guard down in a certain way. And I always say that in my experience, the only thing I've kind of discovered is that you're actually most powerful when you're most vulnerable, because there's nothing to attack anymore. So that's kind of how I approached it. It took me a while to figure that one out, but that's kind of how I approached it, and it worked so far anyway.
Well, it's interesting because you had – tell us the anecdote about the player who – said something on the ice.
Oh yeah,
it was a teaching moment or a learning moment, whatever.
Yeah, it was near the end of last season, and I opened the piece with that little story, and it was so the player asked me about a rule, that something that just happened, which kind of never happens. It's very rare, and no one really knows the rule. No one, it's not a rule you see very often, and he was asking me later about it, and he kind of said, he wasn't even mad at me. He just wanted to know what it was. We were just having a, you know, very, very cordial conversation. And he just, when I explained him the rule, he just rolled his eyes and said, "Oh, that's a really gay, stupid rule." That's what he said. And he wasn't even mad at me. He was just telling, you know, just saying, "Oh, that's a dumb rule. Like, it's not your fault, but that's a dumb rule." But the way he said it was, you know, he's going to say that's such a gay rule. And then he kind of caught himself right in the act, and he switched it around right away and said, "That's a stupid or dumb rule." I found out later at the end of the year that I think that was the team that I found out that I knew that I was gay, and it kind of went around the locker room. The word went around, and so I don't know if at that time he already knew or if he had just caught himself, but either way, I was kind of like, that's interesting.
Well, how often do you hear that stuff? And I've been officiating high school football now for not your level, obviously, but for 3 years, and I've only heard one thing, and I've only heard of one other, and these were the F-bombs.
Yeah.
How often do you hear that?
It kind of depends. You don't hear it as often as you used to, that's for sure. But again, I'm not a good judgment, because I think a lot of guys know that I'm gay, so they may not say it around me, players can be kind of deceivingly smart in the sense that, just like, you know, the wacky guy when I'm not, because they know I'm not looking, and then turn around. When I turn around, well, I missed it. I think, you know, maybe with the trash talk and that kind of stuff, and maybe the same thing. Linesmen here in hockey, anyway, hear a lot more of the trash talk, because they spend a lot of time between the benches during the play and along the boards right between the benches. That's where a lot of it's said, and they're also in the scrums and the fights. So I still hear some of it, but I don't hear a lot of it. As for F-bombs and gay slurs, I mean, they still happen. Do they happen regularly? I wouldn't say every game, no. Not that I hear. Maybe it does. But definitely every I'd say every 3 or 4 games or so, I'd hear at least one. And then I just, you know, if I do hear it, I'll address it later on. But overall, it's mostly just, you know, habit, right? It's just habit of saying it.
But that's a lot. I mean, once every 3 or 4 games, that's a lot to hear that language.
Well, it's just one of those things that it's slowly going away, but, you know, it may just be very casual, like, oh, get out of here, you fag, or something like that. But I think it's not everyone. And hockey has a big time trash talk culture to it, where it's the kind of the game within the game, and you know, it's this constant banter back and forth who has the best chirp, and it's literally all game long. Some guys do it more than others. Some guys don't do it at all. Other guys, that's basically their game, to get under the skin of you know, their opponent or whatever, and it's just nonstop, right? So I don't hear it all. I don't hear most of it, in fact. But sometimes, you know, when I do, I may catch a slur or something like that, and you know, you kind of address it right away.
How do you address it?
I'll just go over. I'll see who it is, and I'll go over either if I have the time and place. If it's a time and place, I'll do it right there and then. I'll just go over and talk to the player. If it's not, I'll wait and at another stoppage or at a media timeout or whatever. I'll go over and talk to them, and I'll say, hey, I'm like. Don't go around calling guys fags. Don't make it homophobic. Don't make it racial. Nothing like that. No slurs. And most of the time he'll say, hey, yeah, you're right. I'm really sorry. It's not gonna happen again. And then, you know, I've had a few times where most of the time that's the reaction. I'm really sorry. It's not gonna happen again. Thanks. Thanks for letting me know. Other times, if they kind of roll their eyes and go, yeah, sure, whatever. Okay, I won't say anymore. That's when I'll go straight to the coach and address it right to the coach. I'll say something like, try to be nice to them and warn them about, you know, homophobic stuff and stuff like that. If it's racial homophobic, I just warned them. I said, I usually tell the coach, you take care of it or next time I will. And coaches, you right away get it. They're, yeah, okay, thanks a lot. Not going to happen again. And he'll usually tell his whole bench right there and then.
Is that because of the level? Because I know in high school football, a racial or anti-gay slur is automatic unsportsmanlike conduct, and I mean, the one time that I didn't hear it, but it was used, the white hat, the head referee, ejected the player. First offense, you're gone. So
yeah.
is it because it's at a higher level, you give the players more leeway?
I think this is the way I see it. I mean, yeah, there are rules that say, you know, there are penalties you can call and all that stuff, but if it's something that's said in a casual way where there's no malice to it, and it's kind of, well, there's no intent and malice to it in the sense that I'd rather address it the way I do rather than come off with, you know, guns a-blazing, because then I look like, you know, RoboCop going around trying to save the world. Where I'd rather just address it and try, you know, give him, you know, try to realize his own mistake. Because most of the time, like I said, they just say it out of ignorance. They don't even know they don't even realize the implication of what they're saying. And then if you kind of bring it up, it's like, oh, and then the light bulb goes on. You're like, oh, yeah, I probably shouldn't have said that. Now, it's different if a guy comes over, you know, and yells across the ice with everyone in the rink hears, or everyone on the ice hears, comes across and off the ice and goes, he calls the guy an effing faggot right across the ice really loud. That's different. He'll take a seat for that right on the spot. There's no leeway there. But if you're just talking to a guy and say, whatever, you're a fag, like, that's, I can address that in a kind of non-confrontational way, whereas the other one has more of a malice to it. Or obviously, if it's directed to me, whether I was straight or gay, I would, you know, take a seat either way. But so yeah, that's kind of how I approach it. And so far, it's worked. Most, I'd say 99% of the time, it's worked pretty in my favor. It's worked pretty well.
Well, what is it about? I mean, we have had out professional football players, baseball players, basketball players. In the case of Jason Collins and Michael Sam, people actually who played, you know, while active. We've never had a publicly gay NHL player, coach, referee, or anything. And yet the perception I always had, oh, Canada's so much more ahead of the U.S. It's much more, you know, progressive, and they have all these players from the Nordic countries. Why do you think hockey, and they have You Can Play projects, are there, why do you think hockey has kind of lagged behind the rest of the sports? What it is about the culture or makeup of hockey that you think leads to that?
I don't know. I think it has to do with what I said before, honestly. It's just that it's such a – there's two things. So what I said – first thing is what I said before, in the sense that, you know, on the ice, you almost have your guard up. So you don't want to give the opponent anything to kind of, you know, chirp at you or get under your skin for whatever reason, even though it's obviously – it's ridiculous. And the second thing, I think, is that hockey is one of those sports where – it's not like football where, you know, there's on the team you're 50 or 60 guys and, you know, you may not see half of them for, you know, except when you cross paths in the locker room or, you know, on the buses or whatever. And hockey, it's just as physical as football, if not more physical. And it's on your team, you're only 20 guys. That's all, 22 maybe, 23 tops. And you're traveling around, you're living with these guys especially in the minor leagues, you're living with these guys probably in apartments and on the road for 7-8 months a year. And, you know, you go on a bus with them, especially in, like I said, in minor leagues, they don't have the luxury of charters and all that stuff. They're on buses, sleeper buses, and they're literally living with these 20 guys for 6-8 months at a time. And this is kind of brotherhood that, you know, that happens, and it's one of those things that, you know, you hear all the time, you don't want to be a distraction. Well, that's probably one of them, even though I don't think it's a distraction, or maybe it will be for 48 hours and then it ends. And then the other thing is you just don't want to be, at the end of the day, you just don't want to be different. You don't want to have another target on your back on the ice. It's something about the hospital. I can't really explain it. But it's in my head, I understand it, but it's really hard to explain.
There's something else. I mean, kind of talking about something else. You mentioned in your story a shooting at your school.
What? Yeah.
But I didn't get much more detail than that. And obviously, you know, I'm sure we had yet another mass shooting in the United States. What happened? And I'm curious, having lived through that, what is the next year of your life like after you experience something like that?
It was a really weird year. And I say weird because it happened when I was 17. And like I said, I was maybe 20 or 25 feet away from the shooter, and I had to dodge it and all that stuff. And, you know, people around me were shot and all this stuff. And so having to deal with that was almost like, well, I was 17, so I didn't really, at first, I didn't really know what was going on. For the first 6 months, like for the first week, obviously, I was a mess. But it's this weird thing that happened that for the next 6 months, I kind of, at the time, I thought, oh, I'm fine. Like, just not, you know, I'm totally fine. But it was really just me shut, you know, my mind, my emotions completely shutting off. And also I wasn't out yet and I was still dealing with all that stuff. Cause I didn't even know I was gay. So I just kind of shut down for about 6 months to a year. And then when I started getting, it was weird. I shut down to the extent that I had no problem talking about it in quite in detail. And it wouldn't affect me because I was just completely numb to it. And then, as I got older, it started kind of creeping back into my mind, and it's almost like it was a retroactive PTSD that it wasn't PTSD in the sense that I woke up in the middle of the night with cold sweats, or had dreams of being shot at or whatever. I mean, that happened at some point, but it wasn't every night or that bad. So it still happens sometimes, but it's nothing, you know, I think it's just whatever's left over. But it was more of a PTSD that affected me it hit me more as a depression rather than as a, you know, those, you know, sleepless nights with the sweats and all that stuff, or kind of, you know, turning a corner and being nervous, or being in a crowd and being nervous. That wasn't so much of an issue. It was more just it turned into a depression for me because I never dealt with it properly, which I should have. And then on top of that, I was closeted and I couldn't figure that out. And then when I did figure out it's funny, as soon as I, you know, figured out that I was gay, I came out 4 months later to everybody, my whole family, friends, and everyone, and everyone was cool with it. And at the time, I thought, okay, that's done. Let's move on with my life. And that was at 22, and I thought the worst of my depression was behind me. But little did I know, it actually got a whole lot worse for the next probably 2.5 years.
Yeah, after you came out, you sort of went into a major depression, and you talked about how music was one of the things that kind of got you through it. You talk about what role music played?
Yeah. I've been playing drums ever since I'm 7. I was in a band for 5 years in my late teens, early 20s. And then I picked up some piano too. I wanted to write a little bit. And I'm not very good at piano, but I have the basic structure down. I'm definitely first and foremost a drummer. Music always resonated with me instinctively, naturally. It's one of those things that it's my other passion in life, besides officiating hockey and hockey. But, I think without an exaggeration, music saved my life. I mean, it's amazing how you can listen to a very depressing or sad song when you are in that depressive and sad state and be able to break down and cry. And, you know, from the outside, it looks like that person's going through hell, which is true. But in that moment, that's one of the most liberating things you can do. And it almost feels good to do it, which is so weird and contradictory. But it's just one of those things that it's a way of releasing, and it works. Like I say in my piece, talking about my depression got me out of it, but the music got me through it. And before I was ready to talk about it, I turned to music. That was my first thing. And I definitely, like I said, it undoubtedly saved my life.
Well, we certainly appreciate you coming on and sharing your story with us, and print and talking about it today, all the way from Knoxville. Trust me, Litton's the hamburger and the cake. You're gonna thank me later. Trust me. Your fellow officials will thank me later.
Yeah, we're all gonna go out for dinner after. So yeah, I'm gonna tell them I got a spot. So I'll let you know how that goes. I already have it pulled up here on my laptop as we speak. So
it was featured in the best 100 hamburgers in the country a few years back.
Okay, so yeah, you gotta try it.
Well, great. Thanks for being our guest today, and I'd like to have you on again at some other point. Maybe we'll actually talk real hockey.
Yeah, absolutely. Definitely. Whenever you need me, just you know where to get me.
Great. Well, everyone check out Dre's story on OutSports, and thanks so much for being our guest.
Thanks. Take care, guys.
I mean, he really is very articulate when he talks about his depression and stuff, and so I think really people need to go read his story, because it is interesting, as you said, the stuff, the external stuff was all positive, and yet internally people still wrestle with it. So the story we keep telling, and that's why these stories are powerful.
Yeah, well, we're running out of time, though. So this podcast is brought to you by AT&T Mobilizing Your World. You cannot forget that, our good friends at AT&T.
I was just going to say it. So I'm not sure if Sid will be traveling next week. If he is, I'll be on with someone as a guest host, some mystery guest. But until then, we will talk to you next week.